This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 75. This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
I'm Nick Northcote in Cape Town.
This is Kevin Sampath from Australia. Coming up on the show, we have a chat with the Afghanistan cricket team's coach, Kabir Khan. We have a chat also with the Pitch Vision batting coach, Gary Palmer. And we also answer your questions for this week. Well, guys, if you haven't heard from the intro, we have Nick Northcote with us. Welcome to the show, Nick.
Thanks very much.
Now, Nick, I'm sure a lot of our listeners are very curious to hear a bit about you. So tell us, Nick, what do you do? Tell us a bit about Cape Town. Tell us whatever you can, Nick.
I'm a wicketkeeper batsman. As a player, sort of learnt my cricket in South Africa, in the Western Cape region of South Africa. I've played a bit of first-class cricket for Boerland. It's a province in the Western Cape, and now represent Italy. Believe it or not, Italy do have a cricket team. I've also captained the South African under-19 indoor cricket team, obviously a couple of years back. And on the coaching side, I've spent most of my time specializing in coaching young wicketkeepers and trying to develop them in my home province.
The teams that aren't so recognized at the moment, especially Italy, how are they going at the moment? I mean, how do you see things compared to, say, the cricket in South Africa, the coaching facilities in South Africa?
The biggest challenge for the developing countries is really facilities, firstly, and secondly, finding a balance between using expatriates like myself, South Africans or Australians with Italian passports, and developing homegrown players. Obviously, on the playing side, you need your national side to be performing in order to grow the game into it, to sort of make it more attractive for young local players in Italy. But at the same time, you need to sort of, or local players who probably aren't up to the standard of guys that have developed their cricket in test playing nations, need to have the belief that they have an opportunity to play for the country too. So it doesn't help having all the expats use up all the spots in the team. From a facilities perspective too, the better the national team does, the more money they get from the ICC, which aids facility development. So it's another one of these sort of unique challenges faced by countries like this.
Nice. Well, we're very grateful for your time, Nick, and we look forward to hearing you knock off a few of these readers' questions later on in the show.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me.
Well, we've now got the second part of our interview with Kabir Khan, the Afghanistan cricket team coach. Now, Kabir has really turned around the Afghanistani cricket team, and he's helped them to a lot of success recently, including qualification for the World 2020 World Cup. They've just missed out on the 50-over World Cup qualifications as well, but there's no doubt that the team is continuing to grow. So here's the second part of the interview with Kabir Khan.
Maybe there's a coach listening to this who can benefit from this. Are there any other efficiencies you can tell other coaches about? Say, do you combine fitness training with fielding training, or how do you make the most of your time?
Well, to be honest, I'm a type of coach. I believe in fitness first, but then obviously, being a cricketer myself, just fitness sometimes bores you as well. So it's boring. So sometimes make it as pleasurable for them, or as enjoyable for them as you can. Make different sort of games. Obviously, my team is not running enough, or they're not sprinting enough, or they're not getting to the level they should be fitness-wise, I make them field more. We do a lot of fielding exercises. We do a lot of drills instead of making them just run like athletes. So those things help. Game plan-wise, when we do nets, we give them short type of goals to achieve, both in runs-wise or not getting out in a net. Bowlers challenge the batsmen sometimes, that you can't get like so many runs in an over from me and stuff like that. So all those things make them more involved rather than just having a plain net, no results out of it. So obviously what we do is just we give them small sort of goals in net sessions. A bowler is bowling, and if they are saying, okay, I have to bowl against the top batsman, and they were like, we have matches against India and South Africa. Mm-hmm. So a batsman is, in his mind, facing one of the top bowlers from South Africa, maybe Steyn or Parnell. And we have got right-hand and left-arm bowlers, so obviously they are thinking of that and obviously trying to improvise their innings. And on the other end, the bowlers are thinking of the batsman as a big batsman or Sachin Tendulkar or anybody else, and we have told them, okay, bowl him in this area, so he's just trying that. So all that imaginary world, because they haven't played on that bigger scale, or any other scale, if you're playing it against any team, you need to just try to prepare yourself, and we just talk about different techniques about the batting against the better bowlers. We have got bowling machines here, we have just got all those marble slabs as well to just make them use the skitty balls or a bit quicker balls, or the balls will just jumps a bit, like all those balls will get a bit of extra bounce off the pitch. So this is all those different type of drills we are doing, and that makes the boys as a batsman or as a bowler more interesting as well, because they are learning something new every day.
How do you split the preparation time between the technical and the tactical types of practice?
As I said, there's not a lot of time we get. Mm. So we can't split a lot of the time, because we have to do both of them together.
Right.
In the nets, standing behind the nets, keep on talking to them. Sometimes one-to-one coaching, sometimes during the net. And it's a proper, because it's a busy time. As a coach, and I know that I've only got 14 days to prepare for the World Cup. You could imagine how much time I've got. So obviously, I can't even spare a second. So I have to work on them every time I get a chance. And even if they are batting in the nets, and then when the bowlers are bowling in the nets, when they are bowling in the matches, and all those different times, we have to keep on talking to them, because to make them ready for the competitions, and talk to them about the different angles they could bowl, or different angles they could bat, singles, doubles, and all those different sort of things. So as I said, there's not going to be a lot of time to just split in between. Sometimes there's a chance, and we always get some lectures as well. We are lucky enough that we play in Lahore and National Cricket Academy. Some of the past stars are here, so obviously we get lectures from them as well, and we just want to make use of every single second we've got.
The Afghanistan team have had a very meteoric rise up to qualify for the World 2020 in recent years. That means the players haven't had a lot of experience at the level that they're now playing. Can you, as a coach, do anything to help speed up them developing their experience?
You have to learn from losing. You have to learn from better players who could beat you at the ground on a day, and then keep on practicing on it. And then obviously that's the only thing I personally think that when you lose, you learn more. The best thing about them is because they are very good learner. They listen a lot, and obviously they stick to the plan as well, which a lot of the top professionals sometimes don't. And the quality they have got working with them, and I've worked with a lot of test players. I've worked with in UK as a coach. I've worked with in Pakistan as a first class team cricket coach as well. And I've worked with a lot of test cricketers. A lot of the top professionals sometimes don't stick to the plan, but their best quality for me as a coach is that they always stick to the plan, and that's the reason they are successful. Because on the experience side, they use my experience, I would say. They borrow my experience, and they keep on it. They don't even think about it. Is it going to be right or wrong? The coach said it, we have to do it. And obviously that's the one thing I personally think that which is enabling them to perform at the higher level, because they don't use their own experience. Sometimes they just look to me, we just make a plan, and they stick to it.
Well, it sounds like you're very lucky as a coach to have a team who are well motivated, and they follow your plans, and they've got talent, and they've taken themselves, with your help, they've taken themselves to a much higher level than anyone would have ever expected for the amount of experience that they've got. So I think everyone at Pitch Vision Academy would want to wish you good luck in the forthcoming World 2020, and maybe you can pull off a shock.
Well, that's what we are going for, to be honest. We don't want to just go there and participate in the tournament. Our boys are quite determined, and they want to perform there at the highest level. And the best thing about my boys is that they're not just going there to participate. They just want to win, and they want to just make an upset over there. So I'll be the happiest man in the world that if they do so, because they've got two big teams playing against them, and if they could put up a very good performance against any of them in 2020, you now know what's going to happen. So you never know; they might beat one of them.
Well, absolutely. Well, I hope so. I hope that we see a big upset. Thanks very much for your time, Kabir, and good luck.
We now have Gary Palmer again with us to answer our batting question for this week. Gary is our Pitch Vision batting coach, and he was a first-class cricketer who played for Somerset, and he now helps younger players in the game with CCM Academy. So if you want to find out more, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. Let's listen into the chat Gary had with David.
This question is from somebody called Gilbert Jessop, who I don't believe that's their real name. That would be an amazing coincidence if it was. And the question is, Gilbert, or whatever his real name is, has been having problems with concentrating. He has a reputation for playing long innings, which is good in itself, but often he loses his wicket in silly ways. And he realizes afterwards that he wasn't following his pre-ball routine or watching the ball. So he's constantly having to remind himself to get back to focusing. So what's going on there? Why does he lose his concentration as time goes on?
Is he losing his concentration, or is he implementing the wrong game plans, the high-risk game plans, hit the ball square of the wicket? Is he getting bored? Why is he getting bored? At what point does he lose concentration? Are we talking a guy who's getting 50s here, 100s here, 150s? Does he actually say what his sort of scores are?
No, he just says he prides himself on being able to play long innings.
Something that might help him would be to keep setting himself small goal targets to keep him motivated. Now, whether those goal targets are, I'm going to bat for 15 minutes at a time, or I'm going to look to score 20 runs and then I'm going to refocus, and I'm going to get another 20 runs and I'm going to refocus. Does this guy sort of focus really well up to a point, and when he gets 50, he thinks, okay, right, I just switch off now, I'm in, and take it for granted that he's playing at his best and doesn't need to concentrate anymore, and then he does something wrong? Does he keep his eye on the scoreboard so he's in tune with what the runs per over is and what his overall goal should be? Or does he just get there and have a bat and then sort of bat for a while and then just switch? I don't know. That's a difficult one.
I've heard, I don't know how true this is, but I've heard that you've only got a certain amount of intense concentration that you can have in any given day.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking perhaps something along the lines of maybe he's concentrating a little bit too hard. He's not switching off between balls. He's very focused at the beginning of his innings, and he kind of uses up all his intense concentration, and his mind just gets fatigued, and then he ends up not concentrating when the ball's bowled, because he was concentrating between balls. Do you ever see that happening?
I think that's as good as answer as any, and probably that's far better than the answer I've given. But I think it's quite a good idea that, and I said this to a kid the other day in practice, that when you're facing the bowler, as he's at the end of his run-up, the one thing in your mind should be to focus really intensely on the ball, okay? And when you get down the other end and you're a non-striker, that's your time to start thinking about the tactics, the match situation you're in, and maybe have a thought for a particular technical issue that you want to tell yourself. Mm. And as soon as you get down the other end again, it's quite intense focus on the ball.
So it's like a volume control. You're turning the volume up and down as and when you need it, so you don't have it at maximum volume all the time.
Definitely, yeah.
Thank you, Gary, for your time. And again, if you want to find out more about Gary Palmer and his coaching, please visit www.pitchvision.com/Gary Palmer. All All right, guys, we have a few questions to get out of the way, so I hope you're ready.
Yeah, and it's a little bit of a wicket-keeping focus this week because Nick and I are both wicket-keepers, so you're outnumbered this week, Kevin. So we've got mostly wicket-keeping questions this week.
Yeah, I'm happy to sit back, David. So let's get straight into it. Welcome to the question section for this week. Nick, our first question is from Lewis, and he says, I'm primarily a batsman, and I'm actually quite interested in wicket-keeping. Even though I'm hopeless at the moment, I've had some nasty injuries in the process. Can you give me some advice for learning the basics of keeping? Now, Nick, this is every sort of wannabe wicket-keeper's question. They want to get into it, but they're scared of injuries, and there's a lot of other things that keep them tentative about it. So how do you think Lewis should approach this, Nick?
I reckon the best place to start would be to learn to catch properly. As silly as that sounds, the best way to limit injuries is to use a proper catching technique. And I think some key points for Lewis to focus on there would be to catch the ball, when catching the ball, to try and offer the maximum glove area and to make sure these fingers are never pointing towards the ball. What that does, if his fingers are pointing towards the ball, then obviously the glove area is reduced and he's got quite a sort of high chance of the ball hitting him on the tip of the finger and damaging his fingers. I think the second key point would be to catch with soft hands. I think by using soft hands, you can help reduce the bruising and the pain, but it'll also prevent the ball from popping out of his gloves and make him a safer keeper, so to speak. And then I think finally, and something that coaches don't always consider, is the need to start off slowly. When you're learning as a wicketkeeper or you're coaching a young wicketkeeper, don't step up and start smashing balls at him. Work and build up the pace and the intensity of the practices slowly. And once the keeper is comfortable at a certain level, so in this case Lewis, then start hitting the ball slightly harder and build the intensity up slowly so as not to damage his confidence. I mean, it's impossible to go from being a beginner to an expert overnight, and it's just hours and hours of practice and patience.
That practice, I think, is the key thing, what you said there, Nick, practice. So with when it comes to wicket-keeping, I actually went to a wicket-keeping workshop this week, and one of the things that stood out that the coach said was, when it comes to wicket-keeping, it's very unglamorous. It's not like going in the net and smashing balls all over the place. It's the very unglamorous job of just catching as many balls as you can catch in the time that you've got available. Catch, 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 catch. And you can do that with cricket balls. You can do that even with tennis balls. I mean, tennis balls are a brilliant way to practice because they're a bit harder to catch than the cricket ball because they bounce out of your hand more easily. So that kind of teaches that kind of controlled take, that kind of strong hand position where the ball just makes that lovely hollow kind of thud into the gloves and you're catching it in the right place and everything feels perfect. And just work on technique all the time. As you said, Nick, it's hands, it's head and it's feet, really. Those are the three things. Make sure that you're getting there and you're in a nice position with your hands when you get there so you give yourself the maximum chance of catching the ball. But the key thing for me is what Lewis said was he wants to do it. Because it doesn't matter how good a keeper you are, if you don't want to do it, there's no chance you're going to be able to do it well because you have to put in the practice.
All right, moving on from that first question, guys, we have a question from Adam now, and he asks, I see a lot of wicketkeepers standing up to medium-pace bowlers on TV. Is it a good idea, and how do you do it? Now, Nick, looking back at the answer from the first question, you said that basics are really important. So does Adam have to make sure his basics are right, that he has all his basics perfect, his footwork's perfect, and he's catching the ball properly before he moves up and stands up to medium pace bowlers?
Yeah, Kevin, I think that's exactly right. I think it's all about confidence when standing up to the wickets. And as a beginner, you really want to get the basics right before you attempt some of the more advanced things. To answer the first part of his question regarding reasons for standing up, there's three possible reasons why I would want to consider standing up. Firstly, if the batsman's regularly advancing down the track would be a good reason to try and execute a stumping. Alternatively, if he notices that the batsman's balance isn't great and he looks like he's falling over and he believes there's an option for a stumping there too, that could be another reason. And finally, just to add a bit of pressure onto the batsman. You know, if he feels that the batsman is looking comfortable and they want to try, him and his captain want to try something new, then then that's always an option too. But when deciding whether to stand up or not, obviously it's a toss-up between, you know, giving yourself the best chance of taking an edge by standing back, or standing up to the stumps hoping for a stumping. Obviously, it's a lot more difficult to take those little edges standing up to the stumps. So on a pitch that's moving around a bit, and there's a high probability of the batsman edging the ball, then maybe not the best thing to consider unless he's completely comfortable with it.
That's right. And I would add, when deciding to stand it up, there's a couple of things I would add to that. I would add that some bowlers quite enjoy it when you stand up to them. Some don't, but some bowlers quite enjoy it because it gives them a little bit more of a target to aim at. There's somebody there. They're kind of aiming at the wicketkeeper now rather than just generally wanging it down towards the stumps. So sometimes a bowler can be more accurate when you stand up to them. And also, if a team are decided they're going to play a little bit of tip and run and they're going to try and knock the ball to feet and run off, if you're standing back, there's nothing you can do about that. But if you're standing back, you can get around the stumps pretty quickly and try and stop those tip and run tactics. So there's a couple of other reasons why you would think about it. I think the key, as you say, Nick, is that you have to have the confidence to do it, and confidence comes with technique. It's again, it's all about head, hands and feet and getting into the right position and being confident that you're going to catch the ball more often than you're not. If the bowler's flinging it down the leg side all the time, you're probably better off standing back, even if you're not standing that far back, relatively speaking. But, you know, if the bowler's relatively accurate and you've got a good chance of getting a stumping, putting pressure on the batsman, I can't see any reason why you can't do it. And the techniques are identical. They're really the only difference, I suppose, is that you have to be in position a little bit more quickly because the ball's coming down a bit more quickly. But the techniques of taking the ball standing up don't change from spinner to seamer.
Our third question is from Jack, and he says, I'm an under 16 skipper at my club. We have a long season ahead of us, playing 12 matches while other age groups only play 5 or 6 matches in their leagues. With the chance of injury and the summer holidays not that far away, we need a bigger squad. At the moment, with just over 4 weeks until our first game, we have a squad of 11, and that's including a 12-year-old and two 13-year-olds. I don't want to be taking teams of 9 or 10 to matches and getting beat easily each week. Do you have any tips on how you can attract new players to your club? Personally, David and Nick, I think the perfect way is to just attract your mates to it. I know cricket isn't the greatest sport to attract people to, but if you have friends, any friends who might be interested or just want to do something on a Saturday afternoon, they could be dragged into the team, sort of build a good base maybe for future years, and who knows, they could be really good in a couple of years. Because not every team, especially junior teams, have the luxury of pulling in players from lower grades as, say, our seniors comp do. But what are your points of views, Nick?
Yeah, Kevin, I agree completely. I think two ways to sort of aid that would be, firstly, just to find out, you know, why players wouldn't want to come play at your club. Let's say they were playing at a different club, and try and address those issues. Alternatively, a way to attract players, especially junior players, is to always, you know, sort of to sort of promise them game time, so to speak. What chases a lot of young players away is the fact that they don't really get much game time, especially if they're in the weaker half of the team. They end up batting at 7 or 8 or 9 and not bowling. And there's no quicker way to destroy someone's love for the game than that. So you might have to sacrifice team performance to a degree, but you'll definitely grow your pool of players that way.
Yeah, I had a few sort of not random ideas, but just kind of ideas that were off the top of my head, if you like. I know one club in this country who they, instead of hiring an overseas professional, which a lot of clubs do over here, instead of hiring an overseas professional, they've used that money to create a scholarship to take one or two players to a cricket academy in the winter. And then they're advertising that and saying, you know, come and play for us, and you've got a chance of getting a free academy place. That's a brilliant, I think that's a brilliant idea, but obviously you'd need access to money to be able to do that. The other thing that's worked quite well for my club is we just phone up the local schools and we say to them, do you want us to come in and do a cricket coaching session? Because certainly in this country, the schools don't really play cricket very much anymore, if at all. Very, very rarely do you see a cricket team in schools. So go in and say, look, I'll take the session. I'll take the coach goes in. I'll take the PE session for that day. You know, give me some interested kids. Try and get them just having a bit of a hit and having a bit of a bowl and having a go at the skills. And then at the end saying, well, if you enjoyed that, come along to the club. Try and build up a relationship with all the schools in the area. That's a tried and tested way of doing it. It's worked for my club. I know it works for a lot of other clubs. And in fact, the ECB over here, the England Cricket Board, have a scheme called Chance to Shine, which is all to do with getting kids who have never been exposed to cricket exposure through coaching. The other thing that I, again, just sort of randomly thought of off the top of my head is go to those schools and say, we're running an inter-school six-a-side tournament on a bank holiday weekend, on a Sunday or something. Bring down, doesn't matter how good they are, it's just a bit of a laugh. Bring down, you know, eight players or whatever, six players, whatever you've got, and come and have a bit of a laugh, come and have a barbecue and come and play cricket against some other schools. And then while they're there, you can pick out the good ones and say to them, hey, if you're enjoying this, come and play for us. Just random ideas, really. But I think the key is that you've got to be creative. You've got to think a little bit kind of, okay, I can't think of anything that of the orthodox stuff that works. So let's try and get in front of kids my age as much as possible, and so we can expose them to cricket. And not all of them will come along, but you know, if you expose cricket to 100 kids, you know, maybe 10 or 20 of them will come along, and suddenly you'll have too many, and you'll have the other problem of having too many. Which is a nice problem to have.
Well, there you go. There's some nice tips for you to take home, Jack. Our next question, guys, is from Rob. And he says, I've heard with legside takes, it's best to keep your right leg planted and just reach with your left rather than shuffle across and wrist closing off. Is this right? Now, Nick and David, you both are the wicket-keeping experts, so Nick, I'll have you address this question first.
I think it's a balance. I think what you really need to look to do is you need to pick the line and the length of the ball as quickly as possible. And then, as with every other aspect of wicket keeping, try and get into position as quickly as possible. Now, the difficulty comes in with the fact that you're blinded. So I think with regards to planting your left leg, I think what that really does is it keeps your balance and your head and your weight going back towards the stumps, even though you're moving down the leg side. You know, there's a bit of a balance there. You want to be taking the ball probably just a touch outside or in line with your left hip, but no further away from yourself, your body than that. So if planting your leg means that you're going to have to reach further than that, then I would say probably not. Probably look to get as in line as possible, as long as your weight is leaning back towards the stump so that you can effect a stumping. I don't know what you think, Doug.
Yeah, I mean, it's been very common, certainly in this country, to coach shuffling across, you know, with that kind of heel click together as you go across to the leg side. And I think there is a risk, although that gives you more distance going down towards the leg side, I think there is a risk there that you end up turning your hip and shoulder towards, so if you assume it's a right-handed batsman, turning your left hip and shoulder to down the wicket, so you end up kind of sideways on, which is
losing your shape.
Losing your shape, you're using half a glove or one glove to catch the ball instead of the wide catching area, and you're losing 20%, 30%, 40%, 50% of your catching area, which with the leg side is even more important than the offside. But as you say, Nick, you know, it's really move as late as you can, as quick as you can. Once you've decided to move, then move as quick as you can and with the least amount of movement that you can, because all you need to do is get your hands to the ball. You don't need to hurl yourself around, and if the bowler is slamming it wide down the leg side so far that you know, you're going to need to go miles down the leg side, then well, the bowling needs to be changed, really. That's not your fault. No one's going to complain if it goes for four if it's that wide down the leg side. But it is about keeping it simple. It is about a minimum of movement. So what I would say in answer to the question is, yeah, keep it simple. Keep the movement as minimum as possible. Decide as late as you can to go leg side, and then once you've decided, go as quickly as you can and move as little as you can, as long as you can get to the ball. It sounds simple, but that takes a lot of practice. A lot of practice.
Well, guys, we have the questions out of the way for this week. But, David, we still have our Pitch Vision competition winner to reveal for this week. Do you have our winner for this week, David?
Yeah, I think probably the most interesting, although as a wicketkeeper, I probably should pick a wicketkeeping question. I think probably the most interesting one was from Jack. You know, we don't get questions like that very often about, you know, how do I attract players to my club, and that's the problem I'm having. You know, most of our questions are technical ones. So, and while I love those, I also love the interesting ones about, you know, club life and all those side of things. So, yeah, let's give it to Jack this week. So, well done, Jack. You win a free course on the Pitch Vision Academy. Speaking of courses, while we're talking about Pitch Vision Academy and courses, Nick, you've got an ebook on Pitch Vision Academy, haven't you? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, David, it came about sort of from coaching for years and realizing that there isn't one sort of comprehensive source of wicket-keeping information on a technical level. So what I've tried to do is put together a book that starts from the basics, absolute basics, from beginners like Lewis, and sort of up a young wicketkeeper can purchase the book and really know all there is to know about wicketkeeping and how to go about improving the game.
And I've read it, and I've got to say it's very good. It's, you know, very well illustrated, and very information is put across very clearly. So if you're a wicketkeeper, or if you're a coach and you're a bit nervous about coaching wicketkeepers, I know a lot of coaches listen to this, but they've never kept themselves, they don't quite maybe know as much as they want, then that ebook is perfect. You can head over to pitchvision.com/academy and pick up a copy of that and download it.
Yeah, perfect. And if you want to enter the Pitch Vision competition, all you have to do is send in your question or a really good comment for the week, and all you have to do is email that into mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. And in the title, please enter podcast competition. And like Jack, you could win a course from Pitch Vision Academy. And if that isn't enough, you can get more information, tips, advice, and tricks on our website at www.pitchvision.com. The site is updated daily and includes forums to chat with other cricketers around the world. You can also subscribe to the Pitch Vision Academy show for free on iTunes, or you can click the link on the show's page that will take you directly to iTunes to subscribe. Stay tuned for our next show on the 16th of April. So if you want to get in touch, have any questions, or want to enter the Pitch Vision question competition, please email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. And we thank you for listening, and we hope to see you next time. So from Sydney, Australia, this is Kevin Sampat signing off.
This is David Hinchcliffe in the UK.
And this is Nick Norcott in Cape Town.